Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
I want to dedicate this song to all the lovers tonight. I expect that might be the whole world, because everybody needs something or someone to love. When it's cold outside, who are you holding? You know, if y'all don't mind, I'd like to talk about this woman of mine.
Complaining about me never being at home.
But when I'm down broke,
she's telling me about the things that my girlfriend's got and what she ain't got. And she want me to go out and get them for her. But girl, I can't be in two places at one time.
Thank you.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello? Hey, this is Mike. Hey, how y'all doing? Oh yeah, everything's good. Just been really busy. Sorry I haven't been here this week. I forgot, but I will be there next week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey man, I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own God. The things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen him.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Who is this in my house? Oh, hell no. I know ain't nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day, going day.
Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle and Shalonda. You could have been anywhere, but you decided to hang out with us this Friday, and I appreciate that. But there has been a change in the lineup. Today we were supposed to be having Michael Johnson on talking about the litigation between him and Jamie Foxx, but he has to be moved to another time slot. But today we have another guest on that is even more exciting, and his name is Arthur Ferham. Mr. Ferham, he deals with things like ancient science and history. There's a technical name for it, but, you know, when I try to say it, it just twist all around my tongue, so I'm not even going to perpetrate, you know, but I'm going to let him announce how it's pronunciated. But anyway, it's going to be a good show. We're going to debunk the myths about the Freemasons and the cult connection and the Illuminati's and just the thing behind the pyramids, all that stuff, and these questions that you wanted to know. So I implore you to call in at 347-945-6003 and hit the number one key, lets me know that you have a question. Now, I apologize for how I sound. I think I'm catching some kind of cold or something. I don't know. Normally, I have that sultry, sexy voice, but, oh, well, this is what you're going to get tonight. But that song to play today was Bobby Womack, If You Think You're Lonely Now. And we just want to give our condolences to his family. Bobby Womack passed away this morning. But I want to also dedicate this show to a special friend of mine, Mrs. Tracy Arnold and her son, Isaiah Arnold. Her son is 18 years old. Tuesday, he was involved in an automobile accident. It totaled out his car, totaled out the car of the other vehicle. He's been hospitalized since then and has a lot of damage to his body, and we hope that God is willing to get him back up and running real quick before he starts school in the fall. And Isaiah, God's willing, that everything's going to work out, too, with your softball career. Not softball, hardball career, baseball career. But this guy is talented. He's a young man. He's very smart, and his mother is a warrior, a Christian warrior. God lift her up and her family during this time of crisis. But we just want to say be blessed. We're praying for you. And without further ado, I want to welcome my co-host, Shalonda. Then we'll get our guest on the line, Arthur Furham. How you doing, Shalonda?
I'm good, Miss Terry. How are you this evening?
You know, as you can tell, I sound like I could be my brother, but
okay.
I don't know what's going on. As hot as it is, how am I going to be catching a cold, but go figure. But anyway, let's welcome our guest, Arthur Furham, without further delay. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Oh, well,
you don't sound
I'm
like yourself tonight.
Yeah.
I'm always looking
like
forward
going,
to
going, and if I can't continue to talk, Shalonda is going to have to hold me up. But the study that you do is called geoglyphology. Is that correct?
You got it right. Even with your cold, you said it right. Geoglyphology.
Oh, bless my heart. That's what I'm talking about. Could you explain to listeners out there who don't know in detail, who don't know in detail exactly what that means? And
well, I'm sorry that you're under the weather today. I'm always looking forward to your bright, cheery voice, and it sounds like you're a little down tonight.
I am, but, you know, there's always going to be another day, and you got so much to talk
That's
about,
right.
baby. I can always bring
well,
you
I'll
back.
I'll see if I can do enough talking for the both of us tonight.
That sounds good. I like that. Go on, talk. Hey, baby.
Okay, here I go. When I retired several years ago, and actually it was probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I finally had time to research the tales that my grandfather had told me as a child about our history in Europe. And at the time, you know, being a youngster, I just kind of filed them in the back of my head and remembered them. But when I retired, I figure it's time that I did my family research. And I started researching, and I have a background as a researcher anyway for many years. And I started doing the research, and I found out that not only was my grandfather right that we were important in Europe, that our family was important, but that it had been involved in some of the biggest history-making events in Europe, but had lost the prominence of the family name. Anybody that's a history buff probably knows the name Sinclair, who was from Scotland that supposedly got lost coming to the United States in 1398. Well, our family came with him, and that's part of this tale that I'll get to later. But anyway, for what I found out was that our family I traced it back, the earliest I could trace it legitimately with proof was 43 BC in Galicia, Spain. Galicia,
mm-hmm.
Spain, which is now part of Spain, but it used to be a country of its own. It's in the Iberian Peninsula, which Spain makes most of. It's in the northwest corner of the Iberian Peninsula, and it's now a county in Spain. But in that country, there was the town of Coronia Galicia, which is where my family came from. And it goes back a lot further than that. But my family was in charge of the military for the Celts for over 1,500 years. And the
wow.
Celts were the beneficiaries of the knowledge that had been handed down for at least 38,000 years that I know of, from civilization to civilization, such as the Phoenicians, the Egyptians, the Etruscans, the Celts and myriad other civilizations before that, they all had knowledge of a secret science that we're going to talk about, which once I discovered it or rediscovered it, I named it geoglyphology, because it's all about geoglyphs. And what a geoglyph is, it's a writing on the earth. Now, everybody's heard of petroglyphs and hieroglyphs. Petroglyphs are on rocks, writings on rocks. Hieroglyphs, you see them in Egypt and on all these things. But geoglyphs are the same type of thing, but they're on the ground. And what I found out was that ancient societies laid out these geoglyphs, which are very large. You can almost only see them from the air. They probably made them so large so they were secret until they wanted to tell somebody. They were land claims is what they were. They were survey markers. And they probably made them so large that nobody could see them until they went and told somebody, hey, this is my territory here. But anyway, I learned how to decipher these geoglyphs based upon directionality, geometry, and there's a protocol that goes with them that tells you where the end of the lines are. These geoglyphs project lines out from the center. Let's go for simplicity and say there's a geoglyph on the ground that looks like the spokes of a wagon wheel. Okay, if you ran a line out from each one of those spokes and used the protocols that they developed to know where the end of the lines stop, and then once you found all those lines on all the spokes, you connected them all, that would be the territory that that particular person that put that geoglyph on the ground claimed. That's the civilization that put it there. That's the land that they claimed. And so needless to say, they discovering this is rewriting history, because it is very specific about where certain civilizations lived and called their own, rather than a theories about where certain people set their boundaries at. Now we have a concrete evidence of where each civilization determined what their boundaries were. And it's really changing everything we know about different civilizations and what they called their own. And a lot of these lines that we're talking about, you trace them out, and you find other things that we didn't even know about, like monuments and other geoglyphs and such as that. And it's come to be very interesting. And the whole my first book, I've done two books. One was called Ancient Signposts, which is available on Amazon, and all that was about was the science, and it gave examples all over the world about these geoglyphs, how they were used in the territories that they make up. And then the second book I wrote was about our family and how the history of our family from 43 BC and how our family tied into all the geoglyphs that they made and that they were involved in. So that book there was called Lamerica, L-A space America, and it was because it shows the pre-Columbian settlement of this country from about 1000 AD to the present.
Okay,
one
well,
thing
let me
that
stop
I learned
right there before we get a little too far into the story.
Okay.
We're going to go back a little further back into time, back into biblical time. Now, you just stated that these geoglyphs, like, you know, the world have markings that's not visible unless you, like, in a plane or something, you're looking down. Points on the earth, pretty much making boundaries. Now, I want to go back to you saying your family, they were with the, you say the Celts?
Celts, yes. Well, that was
right.
That was the last generation that they were with. Now, the Masons replaced the Celts, and the problem with the, well, Let me go back a little bit further. But during this 1,500 years that our family was in charge of the military for the Celts, the Templars came along, okay, from like 1100. Yeah, the Knights Templars. And our family, since the Templars were Celts, our family also trained the Templars in Zealand, Denmark. And so the problem with the Templars is that they were monks, so they didn't marry. And so their lineage was not passed down. When they died, that was the end of that particular lineage in their family. The Farrams, of course, being the head leaders, were allowed to marry because they were not monks. They were officials. And the problem was when they came over to the United States with the Templars, all the Templars died and were replaced by the Masons, which started up in 1450 in Scotland. So the Farram job, if you want to say that, and the Templars both ceased to exist when the Masons took over the United States in 1450. So
okay, well, for the benefit of our listeners, everybody's not familiar with the history and what their role was, the Knights Templars and the biblical connection. Could you just explain so that everyone that's listening, because we have a global audience, understand when you talk about certain people like the Knights Templars, the Freemasons, what was the job of the Knights Templar back in that time? And then after you answer that, I see that my co-host, she has a question she want to ask as well.
Certainly. Okay. The Knights Templar came about around, I should know this, but I don't, but it was around 1100 A.D. The Knights Templars were developed by the Celts to enter the Catholic hierarchy because the Catholics had totally overrun Europe with the power of their religion and their military force, and the Celts were just kind of laying low, and the Celts wanted to get the Catholic Church back to where it started when Christ was here. Now, if you'll remember, the Catholic Church didn't start until 300 A.D., and the Celtic religion, which Christ started, was existing.
539 A.D., the Church of Christ was created, because that's when he built his church upon the rock, which is called Peter, his disciple. And the Catholic Church came after the Church of Christ because it was the day of Pentecost.
300 years later. So the reason the Catholic Church came along is because the Nazarenes, which was the Church of Christ, were converting the Roman soldiers, and Constantine couldn't have that. So he developed his own church, which was called the Catholic Church, and started prosecuting the Nazarenes. And that's why they had to go underground. Well, they came up with this idea that they were going to want to get back into the Catholic Church and change it from within. So they sent Bernard de Clairvaux to France to one of the Catholic monasteries, and he took 38 of his relatives with him, and they joined a Catholic monastery. Well, they were so good that the Catholics allowed them to start their own order, and this order became known as the Templars. Well, the Templars were sponsored by Bernard de Clairvaux, which was a monk that was already in the monastery that was a sponsor of the Templars. And he's given credit for starting the Templars, but really it was a conspiracy to start them is what it was. But anyway, once the Templars were formed and the Pope okayed the new order, the Templars applied to the Pope to protect the pilgrims that were going from Europe to the Holy Land because they were getting robbed as they went along. And so the Templars asked the Pope if they could start protecting these people as crusaders. And in doing so, they developed the first banking system. What would happen is when a crusader would go to the Holy Land, when a citizen would go to the Holy Land, they would turn over all their land and all their money to the Templars, and the Templars would give them like a credit card or, you know, a piece of paper saying
a voucher,
that's the word I was looking for, a voucher that was worth so much money. And as they would go along their way, other Templar banks would give them money as they went along their way. That way nobody could steal from them because they didn't have any money.
Exactly.
Well, needless to say, a lot of these people never came back, and the Templars grew very rich through conducting this banking exercise, and they loaned money to the local people, which was, you know, princes, kings, queens. They took some of this money and loaned it to the local people, and as such, they made money off of that, too. So the Templars became the most powerful entity in Europe during their time period, which
that
was about around...
I gotta stop you because you get ready to get into something that's going to generate a whole lot of questions. But I want my co-host to ask them first, and then we're going to take a small break because people who don't know, this show tonight was supposed to be about Michael Johnson and the Jamie Foxx litigation, how Jamie Foxx stole his book, his music. But however, you know, we couldn't get through to him. And Arthur Fairham, who was supposed to be on the 18th, he's on tonight. And this brother here, he talks about things that was way back in biblical days. He talked about the cults, the Freemasons, the Knights Templars, and the geoglyphs here, which are markings on the earth of boundaries, and that you can really see them from up high. And it shows how they migrated here, and they believe that, I think, what is the Ark of the Covenant is here in the United States. So we got a lot of questions from this guy. He done his homework, but I'm going to let Shalonda ask her question. We're going to take a small break, and y'all need to come back. Tell your friends, call in 347-945-6003 and hit the one key if you got a question. If you don't, just keep your mouth closed and just listen, because we're going to bring the information, and you're going to be, oh, wow. You would say, you're going to be astonished. And I just want to give another shout-out to my friend out there that's cooking dinner. Hey, Kelly, I wish I could have some. Say hi to Mr. Buster for me. And Shalonda, go ahead and ask your question, darling.
Yes, I'm not a huge history major and science major, but I know that when I fly, I notice a lot of markings on the earth. There's a whole lot of people, like a whole lot of countries that have like monuments and things. Were those the type of markings that you're speaking of, like Stonehenge and like the Great Wall of China? We know was a marking to mark their territory, but also in the United States, you notice there's a lot of markings also. So was that those markers placed there to distinguish between territories?
You are right. You hit the nail right on the head. Stonehenge, in addition to being an astrological entity that has a lot to do with astrology, is also a giant geoglyph which outlines the territory of the Celts before they came to America. And so that was, you were spot on that one. And you're right, there are a lot of geoglyphs in the United States, but I doubt if they were big enough. In Nazca, on the Nazca lines in Peru, those are big enough you could see from an airplane. But most of the geoglyphs in the United States are, let's say, maybe 100 yards wide or something in that nature. So they'd be difficult to see from above, but there are hundreds and hundreds of them in the United States. Another thing that's in the United States that are geoglyphs, and it proves that our government knows about all this, is there are, in the 1800s, every fort they built was a geoglyph that outlined the board boundaries of the United States. So, and I found evidence that every major civilization that in recorded history knew about this because they built geoglyphs.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But they don't tell the public about
it. Yeah, it's a lot of things that the government don't tell the public. But you know, if you live long
Amen
enough,
to that.
So we're going to bust it wide open.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, December 31st of last year, we entered the age of Aquarius, which is going to go from a time of 26,000 years of greed to 26,000 years of wisdom and truth. And instead of money being the coin of the realm, wisdom will be coin of the realm. And we're just now hitting the tip of the iceberg. It's going to be amazing. I wish I could live for the next 26,000 years.
I don't, because I have too many damn wrinkles. Okay. But you know, Dad, hold that note off. We need to take a break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I want to take you, Bermuda, Bahama, come. There's a place called Kokomo. That's where you wanna go to get away from it all. Bodies in the sand. Tropical kiss, nothing in your hand. We'll be falling in love to the rhythm of a human band. Down in Kokomo.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take it.
Hello, hello, hello. Now, I just don't know what happened to that, but that song was Kokomo by the Beach Boys. But we had a little technical difficulty, but we got our guests back, and we're back with Arthur. And before the break, we was talking about the geoglyphs, which are basically boundaries in the earth that you really can't see, and they're about 100 feet wide. But also, you touched on the fact that we are approaching the age of Aquarius, which means the age of wisdom, which is going to be more important than money. Am I correct when you said that?
That's correct.
Okay, well, damn, I should be wealthy then, because I'm smarter than my pockets alone.
Well, you have the spirituality and the right attitude to where you and I and a lot of other people that would fit right in. But unfortunately, we're not going to live long enough. But we can get the ball rolling, though.
Well, you know something, a lot of things that I want to touch on tonight for my listeners is that not only are we going to talk about how the Freemasons are a cult, and I know that's going to ruffle some feathers because my mother was an Eastern Star for many, many years before she moved south, and
You'll be able to verify everything I'm going to say, won't you?
Yeah, that's good, too. But, you know, people get a little snickety when you talk about their affiliation with something. And, you know, the Masons and the Kiss the 33 degree and Kiss the Rock and all that kind of crap, man, they are vicious with that, you know, and they are running some things quite as kept. But, you know, also what we're going to touch on is the fact that astrologically there is proof that there is intelligent life out there. You know, what we were talking about, the UFO thing, and people trying to say, somebody just making it up, ain't no UFOs. Okay, come on, let's not be narrow-minded. Why should we assume that we're the only intelligent life out there when all these things are happening around us, phenomena that we can't even begin to understand, like the Bermuda Triangle and all these other things, the crop signs in the fields and all this kind of stuff. Come on now, don't be an ostrich with your head in the sand, you know, pick your head up, you know, and let some things marinate that make some sense to you. But, you know, it is what it is. But I want to get back to you, Arthur. I want you to give us a little bit more about the Knights Templar and how they started the first banking system, and people was getting robbed as they journeyed from place to place, and so they started a thing where, okay, give me all your stuff, I'll give you a voucher, and when you come back to get it, you know, you can have it, you know. I'm sure there was some interest, you know, and if you didn't come back, it was all ours. But anyway, that created a division between the religious heads, because they was getting paid more money, and they was workers, and, you know, the workers are not really supposed to get paid more than the so-called boss or the people over top of them. So, you know, what caused that? And tell about that theory about them coming here to America with that religious artifact that the world is still trying to find.
Okay, well, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that I had opinions on the Ark of the Covenant. I have no opinions. I think you were you heard that from a man named Scott Walter, who hosts the show America on Earth. That's where you heard it at. I have no opinion on that myself, so I just wanted to clear that up.
Okay, but do you believe, though, that the Knight Templars or the Freemasons, their name has changed, do you believe when they came here, because when they created that drainage system and had the geoglyph here in the United States, do you think they brought some artifact here that was of religious origin? And if it was, then that also proved that Jehovah God and Jesus Christ and all those other things, they exist. So everything starts to fall in place. It's not no longer a theory.
Well, there's no doubt Templar and Egyptian and Etruscan artifacts have been found all over the eastern United States. So for people with an open mind, the fact that people were coming here for thousands of years is not even a question. But for people that don't have an open mind, then, of course, they can say anything they want. But when you have an artifact in your hand and you can prove that it's not a fake, it had to come from somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But as far as the Templars go, the Templars, like I said, were originally, they were covert to start with. They were Celts that joined the Catholic Church and formed an order to get within the Catholic Church and change it from within, because they were at odds with the way the Catholic Church was conducting themselves in ways other than what Christ originally taught. But anyway, they got inside the church. They became an order of the church. They were all the Templars were monks and did not marry. And they originally were to help the pilgrims go from Europe to the Holy Land. However, on their first trip.
I'm sorry. You said, you know, they was monks, but he wasn't married. So, you know, other than the problem that they have in the religious arena, them brothers had to be backed up. They both had to have been losing their damn mind.
Well, yeah, I don't agree with that theory either, but that's the way it goes in the Catholic Church. You know. But anyway, the Templars, on their very first trip to the Holy Land, did not come back. They stayed in the Temple of Solomon, which is the same place where the Jewish temple. First of all, there was the Jewish temple, and then on top of that, Solomon built his temple. This is all in Jerusalem. And then on top of that, the Muslims built their temples, which is there to this day. And so all the Jews have left is their one wall of their temple that they pray at and put their prayers in. So there's been three temples on that one site before. And when the Templars got to Jerusalem, They spent 2 years digging underneath the Temple of Solomon because the the Muslims were about to take over the place. And, of course, a year or two later, the Templars spent years fighting against the Muslims, trying to keep them from taking over the Holy Land, but they weren't successful. But anyway, here they are, spending 2 years underneath the Temple of Solomon, digging these artifacts out, like you're talking about. Who knows what they were? Could have been the Ark of the Covenant. Could have been a lot of stuff. Who knows? But anyway, we know that they took stuff out of there. And so they take all this stuff out, and that's where they got their name, Templars, because they lived on the temple site and worked there for a number of years. And then they came back to Europe and started their banking system along with helping the they didn't actually help the travelers. They actually just took their land and gave them vouchers, and so they couldn't get robbed. But anyway, they made so many loans to these princes and kings that they became the richest organization in Europe. And now that these princes and kings owed them lots of money, well, what's the best way to get rid of your notes? Kill off the people you owe them to. So they went to they went to the Pope and told a whole bunch of lies about things that the Templars were doing in their religion. And so the Pope agreed with this French king to allow the king to wipe out the Templars. Well, he did go grab a whole bunch of the heads of the Templar and killed them, and burned them. But the vast majority of the Templars escaped through France. And one thing I didn't tell you, all the Templars were also seamen before they could be Templars on the battlefield. They taught them how to be seamen.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Arthur, my co-host, she is patiently waiting to ask this question. And after you answer her question, I want you to explain if the Knights Templars were supposed to be religiously in tune and willing to die for the cause of Christ and preserving the rights of the you know, religion. And even though banking thing came up as a backhand side of thing, how could they just flip from being ruthless?
Go ahead,
Shalonda. I see you got a question.
I really didn't have a question. I just had something to say. I know that I grew up with my grandfather being a Mason. He was actually a master Mason, and he was he had the 33rd degree honor. I always believed Masons to be religious, secret but religious. It was a really secret organization. And I decided not to become an Eastern Star because I really didn't understand. And since I grew up away from him, even though I knew my grandmother was an Eastern Star and all of that, I just grew up away from Eastern Stars. And the people that I seen that were, they weren't the type of person that I would have wanted to grow up to be, basically. So it did seem a little shady between the Masons and the Eastern Stars, how secretive their society was. So I was just trying to get an understanding, I guess, because since I was looking at it from a child's eyes, it was just something that I never chose to be a part of, actually. And I see a whole lot of young guys today that are starting to become Masons again, whereas when I was a young adult, a whole lot of the young men back then weren't really pressing to be Masons. So I don't even know how to question it. Do you think that they still have a religious base, or is it something like it would become like the Illuminati?
Well, I'm going to have to answer that for him because we just see he has some technical difficulty on his end, and he just dropped. So he'll be back on in a minute. But I can just relate to that myself because my mom, she was in the Eastern Star. But I had discussed these areas with him earlier, and like he was saying, they are a bona fide cult, just like people will be talking about that Jim Jones and the Gateway people and these people that were supposed to be that Wacko and Waco. You know, he said that the Freemasons are truly a cult. Now, you know, my thing was, what's the difference between them being a cult or just an organization? Because we have a lot of organizations out there. Like, for instance, we have UNICEF. It's an organization to help Red Cross. You know, I mean, different things, you know, but it is so crazy, you know. But he is back, and I'm going to let him answer that question for you. Arthur, before you lost us, the question was, go ahead, Shalon, you ask the question.
Okay. Like I was saying, my grandfather was a Master Mason with the honor of the 33rd degree, and my grandmother was always an Eastern Star. And I guess from looking at it as a child, I was never, you know, I never grew up thinking, oh, I'm going to become an Eastern Star when I grow up, because I didn't like the type of people that I saw. It seemed like they were sort of brainwashed, because from my knowledge of my grandfather and the way I remember him, he never was a close grandfather compared to, say, my father's father, who was like, we were stuck like glue to him. He was a very distant grandfather and father to my mother and them, and I noticed that my mother and them even didn't follow. Only one child became a Mason. His other two sons never did, and his two daughters never became Eastern Stars. And it just seemed like they were more, like Miss Terry was saying, an occult, even though that they masked themselves as if they were religious. Oh, he dropped again.
Well,
he's having issues in this area.
We have some technical difficulties on his end, and I don't know what the weather's like where he's at, but, you know, earlier on that break, we had played a song by the Beach Boys, Kokomo. We're going to take a small break and get our guests back online, and y'all stay tuned. Get those questions ready, and just call in to 347-945-6003. Thank you. back with authoress Tara E. Lau and Shalonda on Unmasked. And I realize a lot of places is catching it right now. You got thunderstorms and everything, and the weather is interfering. And sometimes, you know, I believe when the message is important, I just think there are some supernatural forces that's trying to interfere so they don't get out, because we were just getting on the tip of the iceberg about how the Freemasons are part of a cult and that Illuminati thing. And they started originally as part of the Knights Templars, and then it came into that because the simple fact the monks, they, you know, it was celibate, and they couldn't have kids, and so the line died out, and they came into play. But everyone, I'm sure, knows someone who's been affiliated with the Masons and the Eastern Stars and all the other kind of stuff. And I'm personally, I just want to say, I'm not trying to be offensive, but you know, the truth is the truth. And you know, when there's facts, you know, we just want to smack it right upside your head and let you see it for yourself. And while we got Arthur on the line, we're going to let Arthur address that issue, because he's having some weather issues at his house and power keeps going in and out. But we're going to play this by ear and we're going to make it do what it do. So, Arthur, go ahead, baby. Jump in there and answer that question that Shalonda
has. Okay. Her question is the center of the whole story that I'm telling, other than the geoglyph part. But the story that I told in the book L'America about the Templars, the Celts, and the Masons, what I'm about to say in answer to her question is the center part of this whole story. The Templars were visited, according to history, and according to the records in the Catholic Church. I'm not making this up. When I did my research, I actually looked up the records in the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church, when France wanted to claim that they were the first church in the Catholic Church, the Pope wrote back to him and says, no, the first church was in Cornwall, England. And the Celts have always carried this story and have folklore in Cornwall that verifies this. And the people, the Celts in Cornwall, when Jesus, everybody knows Jesus was gone from the Holy Land for like 12 years after he was like 12 years old. He didn't come back till he was 20-something. So during this period, his uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, was a metal trader from Cornwall to the Holy Land, to Jerusalem. And it was Mary's brother is who it was. And he went to Cornwall with his uncle at one time on one of these trips. And from there, he learned some things from the Celts, some of the things that they had been, that had been passed down through the eons to the Celts. And they also took Jesus to Tibet, to the monks in Tibet, who spend their whole life living and preserving the religion that was taught by the ancients. The same religion that was taught by the ancients is the religion that Christ came back to give to the world through the Celts. Now, this is why the Celts and the Catholic Church were so at odds, is because the Celts took this religion that Jesus gave and were living it for 300 years until the Catholic Church came along. Well, the Catholic Church stemmed from...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm so sorry to break in.
That's
Arthur.
Fine, because if, if you have a question, so does everybody else. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, but when you said that Jesus left at the age of 12 and he was gone for 12 years or so, and he came back, you said the religion he gave to the Celts, was it Christianity? Because they was into... the Catholic way of doing things. I mean, what religion did he bring to them?
Okay, what he brought to them, and this is going to be a big surprise to a lot of people, and it's one of the compliments I'm going to give to the Masons. I'm going to give and take to the Masons in a minute. But what he gave them was transcendental meditation, which is the same thing that Tibetan monks use. And what it is a direct connection from you, the individual, to God. During that time period, what Jesus taught us was to use transcendental meditation to connect to God and to develop ourselves into God-like creatures. And that's what the Celts received. That's what they taught. And this prevailed through a group called the Nazarenes until 300 AD, when the Nazarenes started converting the Roman soldiers. And Constantine, who was the head of the Roman soldiers, the king of the Romans, decided that he couldn't have this anymore because it was sapping his power away. And so he started his own church, the Catholic Church, and started aggressively getting rid of the Nazarenes. And they had to retreat to Portugal and Galicia, which is on the west coast of the Iberian Peninsula. So the most of the religions that you see today are Protestant religions that are direct result of the Catholic Church and have nothing to do with what Jesus really taught, which was transcendental meditation and connecting with God directly rather than through an intermediary. Like, I mean, even the Catholic Church, you can't even talk to God unless you go to a priest and tell him your sins and get absentation from the priest.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. Now I'm going to irritate a lot of people, maybe even you saying that, but I've done a lot of research on the subject, and that's how it lays out. What do you have to say about it?
Well, I kind of believe that I don't know everything, but, you know, I know what I know if you know what I mean. But it's just that I believe it's a combination of things. Like the Bible is scripture and directions and things that we need to get through living here on earth. But like you said, the transcendental thing, I kind of believe that because I know sometimes when, you know, whether I'm sick or whether I'm just in thought or I'm by myself, I just got that quiet space. Sometimes I feel like myself that, you know, I can drift out of my body, and I don't tell nobody
exactly.
That because they say, "Oh, you're crazy," you know. And I think sometimes
it's not crazy.
I could. Yeah, I felt that one time. I had a accident when I used to be a paramedic in the ambulance, and while I was laying on the gurney for them to check me out and stuff, you know, I felt like I could just rise up and leave my body because I was in a different dimension. I could see everything that was there, but I felt
mm-hmm.
like I was in a different dimension where I could have did that. But I didn't want to do that and leave my mother to mourn.
Okay, let me stop you right there and explain that. Transcendental meditation is to allow you to do that very thing. We all have a physical body and we have a soul, and I don't think there's anybody of any Protestant or religion that will disagree with that. We have a body and a soul. And according to the transcendental way of teaching, that the soul is godlike and can do all the things that God can do, like levitate and meditate and psychic
mm-hmm.
powers and all those things. Well, our physical body can't do any of that because we aren't connecting with our soul. Now, what transcendental meditation is supposed to do is to allow you to leave your body like you're doing and get in contact with all the knowledge of the universe, if you so desire. And through practice like the monks do, you know, none of us have the time to practice this 24 hours a day like they do.
Mm-hmm.
But you can strive towards excellence, and of course we'll never reach it, but you can strive that way. And you see these people that these people that solve murders on TV through psychic.
Right.
Okay, this is a person that somehow their soul, psychic portion, has connected directly physically with their physical body, and they're able to do that. Well, there's a lot of other aspects of your soul that can do the same thing. Now, they may or may not have gotten that through meditation, and they might have gotten it through an accident or something else, but that is the thing that you strive to do through transcendental meditation, is to bring your soul in connection with your body so that you as a person can become more spiritual and less afraid of the world. I hate to sound like a preacher, but she asked the question, and I got to answer it.
Yeah, but you know, when I did that, I kind of felt like I could have willed myself to die. I could have actually severed the connection with my body and my spirit realm, and it kind of scared me in a way because I thought if I stayed in that plane that I was on too long, I couldn't get back into my body. So that was kind of weird.
Let me tell you what happened to me. When I first got introduced to transcendental meditation, I've studied religion all my life because all my life I've been unsettled. I didn't think I had the answers that I should have. And just, several years ago was I introduced to transcendental meditation, and it answered all the questions that I had about the previous religions that I had studied. And but the thing is, the first experience I had, I says, okay, now I've got the solution. I want to see if it works. So I went into meditation, like they told me, using the mantra and all that, and I was able to get to heaven, if that's what you want to call it, and I saw my relatives lined up there, and my dear sister, who was my best friend that died young, and she started running up to me with her arms open, and I got so scared that I jumped back into the state of consciousness, and I've never gone there again. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Kind of scary. It's kind of scary until you get the hang of it. And I really, the only part of it that I've developed personally is the ability to go out into the world and gather knowledge that I have never known before or have no reason to know. I bring it back and I use it in my work, but that's the only thing that I've developed. But if you do it religiously, you can develop a lot of other things. But let's get back to the Masons, okay?
Okay.
Or do you have some questions here?
Yeah, Shalonda has another one, and then I have one. I'll give her the courtesy to go first because I just keep running my mouth.
All right.
Okay. I was just still waiting on the issue about the occult with the Masons and the
I was just getting ready to go in that. Okay, here we go. I'm going to give you a little bit of background before that, though. But my ancestors, being in charge of the Celtic military and the Templars at the particular time that they came to America, when the Templars were kicked out of Europe, the Sinclair of Scotland, who was the head of the Celts, and the Ferrums, which is my relatives, who was head of the military, brought the Templars and all the military associated with them to the United States because Norway was trying to take away the United States from the Templars, who had been here even before Norway did. But that's all explained in my book, why and how the Templars got here. But what happened was the Templars and Sinclair came over here together, and the Templars were busy trying to keep the Norse from entering through the Great Lakes, and the Sinclairs settled in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, they'll tell you in the history books, they disappeared and they don't know where they went. Well, in my book, I proved beyond a shadow of a doubt through geoglyphs that they did land in Boston, Maryland. But
Baltimore, Maryland, not Boston, Maryland.
Baltimore, Maryland, thank you. But the Templars, like I said, died off after a while, and the Ferrums went off on their own and started exploring other parts of the world. But in 1450, which was just 50 years, you remember I said that the Ferrums and Sinclairs came to the United States in 1398. Well, in 1450, which is just one lifetime exactly, after the Templars got here, remember I said they all died off because they didn't have families.
Right.
In 1450, in England, the relatives, Sinclair's son, allowed some of the Templars that were left there to invade the organization called the Wall Builders. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They took the organization and changed the name to the Freemasons. Now, the name the Freemasons come from is in the Celts there were three levels of society. There was the royalty, which was the Sinclairs. There was the military, which was the Farrams, and everyone else was called freemen. So
okay.
When the Masons changed their name to the Masons, they changed it to the Freemasons. That's where you got that name, Freemasons. Well, the Freemasons were not monks. They were all married. They were all businessmen. And they saw this big wealth of resources in the United States. And unlike the Templars, who wanted to keep things spiritual, they wanted to make some money. So they came over here. They came over here after the Templars died off and started constructing an organization which eventually became the United States of America. And everybody knows that the Masons were deeply involved in the organization of America. And
mm-hmm.
Two things I'll say about the Masons. Number one, they took all the resources that were available at that particular time and sold them to gain wealth. And so most of the wealthy people that were here at the beginning of our country were Masons. But they did keep the transcendental meditation that the Celts had been taught when Christ came over. Now, this lasted about 200 years, and in Newport, Rhode Island, at the Newport Tower, which is also a geoglyph,
right.
there's a statue of a preacher that was the one responsible for changing the majority of the religion in the United States. Believe it or not, the United States for a couple hundred years were transcendentalists. In the 1800s, this preacher in Newport, Rhode Island, was responsible for the conversion of everyone from transcendentalism to Protestantism, because the majority of the people that were coming here were Presbyterians from Scotland. And at the time, Scotland had passed a law saying it was a law that everybody in Scotland had to be a Presbyterian. And then all the other people that were coming here from England were Protestants. So it was very easy to get this country converted from transcendentalism, which Jesus taught, into Protestantism, which was an offshoot of Catholic Catholicism. So the secrecy of the Masons is twofold. Number one, they don't want you to know that they ran all the Indians off and took their land. And number two, they don't want you to know that they're practicing transcendentalism, because nobody would take it too lightly, I suppose, because even though I'm a transcendentalist myself, a lot of people don't understand it, and so most people would just soon not tell anybody about it. But I think it's the best thing in the world, so I don't have any problem talking about it.
Because I really haven't got a clear indication, and I think this is when your call had dropped earlier. The question I had was if the Freemasons is a cult, what makes them a cult opposed to them just being an organization? Because when we say cult, we think of some type of brainwashing. We think of some type of antisocial, you know, something that is not receive in a pleasant way, you know what I'm saying? So
okay.
So we don't have a good connotation when you use the word cult. So what's the difference between them being considered a cult or organization?
Well, I think the definition, and I don't hold me this, but I believe the definition of a cult is a group that is secretive in their organization and the way they do things. And in that respect, the Masons would be considered a cult. While I was studying religion, I studied the Mormons.
So with the Mormons.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Mormons are an offshoot of the Masons. Joseph Smith, who started the Mormon Church, was a full-blooded Mason and started the church in the image of the Masons.
But he was a young boy at 16 or something.
Well, that's when
he was
received
in the woods
the gold
and saw this angel,
yeah,
Maroni.
That's when he received the gold plate. But I think he was 20-something when he was killed. Mm-hmm. But I'm very familiar with the Mormons. And
I used to be a
I know
Mormon
that
myself.
Okay, well, you know what I'm talking about. Their services and everything mimic the Masons. And if you were a Mormon, you know that they're very friendly people, very family-oriented, and it's not a cult.
That's what sucked me in. That's exactly
right.
What sucked
exactly.
me in. They was loving
I know.
Hey, Tory, hugging on me and giving away
yeah,
free food.
Exactly.
And got me a nice job at the Camp Pendleton. I said, oh, damn. I said,
but
I
like,
get over like a fat rat.
but like a lot of organized religion, they want all of you. They don't want to just have part of you. They want the whole thing.
I know.
So that's what if I had to say who I think the best religion is, I'm against organized religion as a transcendentalist because I think
mm-hmm.
a person should speak directly to God. But
mm-hmm.
if I had to say who I think the best religion is on the face of the earth, I would say the Mormons. Because they are so family oriented, and they really know the truth. They don't. They know the truth. I'm not sure how well they practice it, but they're very good
well,
Christians.
Well, the thing I had with them is, you know, as a Mormon, I was over top of the young guys that do the missionary in the field and the two brothers on the bicycles. But the thing I had with them is like when I was visiting one of the new temple they had just built recently in San Diego, you know, we was going and there was different rooms like where it's supposed to be bounded, you know, in this room, celestial room, where if you get
mm-hmm.
married to somebody, your soul is bounded in heaven when you pass on. But what kicked me was
right.
Everything was fine until they asked me to be a proxy, baptize someone who was already died. And I said, oh, hell no. I said, because what I've learned about baptism from the book of Acts 2:38, you first got to acknowledge that God is God, you know, repent from your sins, you know, and accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior and go down in a watery grave and come up brand new
mm-hmm.
as a new creature in Christ. But, you know, and for me to sit there and say somebody I don't even know way back then, I'm going to baptize myself as a proxy for you, and you might be the biggest demon walking around. And I said, oh, no. So I try to get out.
I cannot argue with what you
out.
Just said. I cannot argue with what you said at all. all I can say is if you're talking about the physical realm, and if you extend it a little bit into the spiritual realm, I think you might be able to connect. But that is something that everybody has to decide for themselves.
Well, what do you think about the Scientology? But okay, I got so many questions because people, you just don't know. This guy here, Mr. Farrell, man, he has a wealth of knowledge that we just can't tap into in 2 hours. And if I don't shut my mouth, my co-host can't ask her questions. But I'm going to let her ask the question, Shalonda, then I'm going to take a small break. We're going to come back and we're going to get into the Scientology, the UFO thing, and maybe we want to.
Well, Scientology, I'm not familiar with, so I can't speak to that one.
Okay, well, I thought they was a hitman organization. Like, you know, people get in, they got money, and they don't want them to get out. I said, woo, I'm scared of that,
exactly.
But yeah, Shalonda, darling, you gonna ask your question.
Yes. Okay. I've known that, like you said, our founding fathers, a whole lot of them were Masons, a whole lot of the ones that signed the Declaration of Independence were actually Masons. So when you said that it was about the money, it made me think about the back of a dollar bill with this all of the symbols that are there. Could you touch on
yep.
The symbols and let our listeners know, like, the different symbols and their meanings on the back of the dollar bill that also come from the Masons?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like I said at the beginning of the show, all this knowledge that the Masons have and that the Celts had and that the Etruscans and the Egyptians and the Phoenicians had has been passed down for millennia. And what the Masons were trying to do is connect this information that they now have back to Egypt. And the eye at the top of the pyramid is the Eye of Horus, which is a symbol for God seeing everything that is going on. And the pyramid, I'm not quite sure what their intention was for putting that on there, but it fits right in with the Egyptian philosophy of transcendentalism.
Well, the pyramid is a symbol of the Illuminati, that V, whether it's upside down, sideways, or whatever, because I was doing a little inquiry and interest about the Illuminati, and some of these singers like Beyonce and them and a lot of other people, when you we talk to them, they use that V symbol in their clothing, in their hands, signals and stuff, you know. And I believe that pyramid is what the upside-down V, which is the Illuminati, letting people know that Satan is running this thing. They hear about the money because he is the principality of the air.
Well, the Illuminati didn't exist when they first put the pyramid on there. I don't believe, did they? So, you know, they may have adopted it, but it couldn't have meant that when they first put it on there, I don't believe.
But, no. Illuminati's been around for a long time. They was around, like you said, back with the Knights Templars and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they was trying to be slick with it, you know. They didn't want to come out because they had one of these shows on Discovery Channel about them. They've been around for a long time, and they were making the connection with the Freemasons way back then and the different people today and the structural buildings like the one they got, was it in New York, was it near Rockefeller Tower? They got that symbol of that man holding an atlas or something, and straight across the street is a church, and they was talking about how it's like good and evil, and they was getting into detail about that. But no. The Illuminati, man, I don't even want to go into detail reading about them because I'm just afraid that negative energy might jump on me and can't jump off. And I said, I just want to leave that shit alone.
Well, that's one thing about
the 1700s that they came about in late 1700s.
Yeah, well, see, the Masons were around before that.
Yeah, right. But, you know, it's just like, you know, Satan was there when he was trying to tempt Jesus when he was in the wilderness for 40 years, you know. But I just think that, you know, it's just that they become more bolder with their presence. You know, even though you say they might have came out of the box in the 1700s, but they've been around way before that doing the dirt, you know what I'm saying? But
there's been an organization, and it's one that I associate with all the other civilizations and the heads of civilizations down through time, that their goal is one world power. And I do believe that that's what everybody says the Illuminati is all about. I haven't studied them, and I don't have
any. Yeah, that's true. One world power.
And this is another thing I'm going to throw in here that's not in my book and that I haven't discussed with too many people. But when I did the geoglyphs all over the world, there are certain amount of geoglyphs that form a puzzle of territories that do not overlap, that match perfectly, just like a puzzle that encompasses all the land on the earth. And it goes back to the writings of Plato and Critias, where he said back in the golden times of civilization, the parents of Poseidon divided up the earth into a number of territories and gave one to each of their daughters and sons, and for thousands of years there was peace on earth until Atlantis was covered up, and then Poseidon decided to go to Greece and start trying to take that land, and that's when everything went downhill from there. But when you talk about trying to be a one world order, I haven't made up my mind yet if that's not a good idea, because if we were a one-world order, I think possibly we would be all at peace like we are with England, Europe, Japan. You know, it's all people. It's possible, I do believe, for the whole world to live in peace if we could just get the Muslims on board. So possibly,
but you know,
and I'm not saying what. I'm not sure that.
I thought about that one time, too. But, you know, Arthur, you know, at some point, if we all receive the same, you know, I don't really think it's going to last because everybody don't want to be on the same plateau as someone else. And the reason can be for a lot of reasons. For instance, if I see somebody out there who is lazy, ain't doing nothing, is a bum, all of a sudden we get the equal share. If I see somebody that ain't working and I'm working, we get an equal share. If I see somebody who act crazy, you know, or mentally, whoever is born mental defects or whatever, you know, they get equal share. And I just believe the society is just not made that way, that we all could be equal, because then it's become a robotic, you know, and then someone has to control everything.
Oh, I understand exactly what you're saying, but I don't agree with that either. I wouldn't want to see there's a word for that, and it's communism, simple as that.
Yeah.
Where everybody's equal and everybody gets an equal share. That's never worked in the history of the world, and it never will work. You have to have checks and balances, and you have to work for what you want. And if you don't want to work, that's fine, too. Live in a cardboard shack under the bridge is up to you. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But it has been possible for the civilized nations of this world to live together in peace. And I think that it's possible that we all could. Now, I think that's why the United States has worked so hard to try and get this to happen. It seems like in history, everybody that goes to war with the United States kind of goes home peaceful. Don't ask me why, but maybe that's just what capitalism does to you. I don't know. It happened in Vietnam. It's happened in South Korea. It's happened all over the place. But it's something to think about.
It is. And we need to take a small break, and when we come back, we're going to get into that UFO connection with the astrology.
How much longer we got?
And the proof. Well, we got about 35 minutes, darling, and we're going to discuss your books before we get off of here.
All right.
So anybody, if y'all got a question, y'all better kick it in now. You need to dial 347-945-6003 because Arthur Ferrum, you know he's here. He did the research for you, and he could answer those questions that you said, I just wanted to know. No more guessing. Get the answers right here. Stay tuned, and we'll be back in 2 and 2.
You know, someone asked me recently, what do I do when I have downtime? Thought about this for a moment, and in my mind I thought about a nice, hot, soothing bubble bath, candles, a nice glass of wine, with the right book to read. And instantly I thought about authoress Terry E. Lyle, because I knew I was guaranteed to get a good laugh or some soul searching, just like a few of her other books, Insane, Peeling Back the Mask, and her latest, Exposed. This author has written 9 books, and I can't pick a favorite. But my advice to you is to make your own choice by going to her personal website, where she even signs the books for free, at www.terrylyle.com, or go to Author House, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or your local retailer to get a copy and start your own collection today. This is the last time I'm going to say, you can't borrow mine.
But in the game I lost you. What a
was Smokey Robinson. Ooh, baby, baby, took you back into time. And we're back again with Arthur Furham. And we have been talking about a lot of things from the Freemasons and the Knights Templars and where religion started and transcendental thing that Jesus came back and shared with the Celts. But we also got so much that we want to discuss, and we don't have that time. But I want to ask you, Arthur, okay, we have touched on that there's proof about the religious artifacts that has been taken out of Solomon's temple and was thought to have been brought here to America. And with that being said, that religious proof also proves the fact that there is a high intelligence, what we call Jehovah God and his son Jesus Christ. And if that is true, and we do have the proof, which we do and can be validated, okay, that's where I see the UFO connection. A lot of people don't want to acknowledge that it's there, but the UFO thing is nothing but a higher intelligence, and we are babes as far as, you know, the time we've been here on Earth and the planets and all the other things, how some are older than us existing. So if we believe religiously about Jesus Christ and everything, then why couldn't Jesus Christ be considered to be that higher intelligence? Because he is. He's almighty. He can do everything. But why couldn't that be what we call the UFOs, opposed to we giving names and titles to the people that we consider to be our Lord and Savior?
What I hear you saying is, why couldn't Jesus have come here from a higher civilization? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that, you know, people try to pretend like we're only creatures here on Earth, you know, like they didn't exist nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So by the fact that we believe in Jesus, and I do, I'm a firm believer in Christ.
Well, transcendentalists believe in Jesus.
Yeah, he is a higher intelligence because he can do things that I can't do. So isn't that the same description they give for aliens? They are a higher intelligence? I mean,
well,
what's the difference in the, you know, description?
Well, a lot of people say that Jesus was the product of a higher civilization. If you want to call them aliens, that's fine. Everything you've said in the past 5 minutes, I can't disagree with. Now, to be honest with you, and my presentations and my books and that kind of thing, I stay away from UFOs and aliens and all that because of the connotation that's attached to it, but that doesn't mean I don't believe you. Okay.
Exactly. Well, I heard that. Y'all listeners, y'all hearing that? The guy, he just said, you know, what I've been saying, I've been on the mark. So when I'm giving y'all that free advice, you know, take it to heart. Because we're in the age of Aquarius.
Yes, we are. And I was talking with one of my colleagues the other day, and, you know, we have all this communication, and UFOs are starting to be more frequent, and we can see it from, you know, one shows up over in another country, we can see it the same day, and that kind of stuff. And you've got these crop circles, and we're starting to decipher geoglyphs, and we're starting to uncover the remains of civilizations that are 150,000 years old, when history and religion just 20 years ago told us it was no more than 5,000 years old. And there's a lot of proof that there was something going on long, long before we came here. And whether it was an ancient civilization or an intelligent being from another planet or wherever, it exists. There's no doubt about it. And, of course, academia is afraid of losing their job if they acknowledge it. But any intelligent person can't ignore all the evidence that's been put out there.
Exactly. You're hitting a nail on the head. And real quick, you know, just tell us a little bit about the two books that you wrote.
Well, the first one, when I discovered geoglyphology when I was researching my ancestry in England and Europe, I was as surprised as anybody because I'd never heard of it before. And after doing some more research to see if anybody else had talked about it, I realized that I was the only one that knew about it, except I found out later that all the heads of government throughout civilization knew about it, but they haven't told anybody. And the way I confirmed that is that the buildings and the monuments that they've built down through time all conform to the protocols of the ancients. And so I know that the heads of the government knew about it, but they haven't told anybody. So I decided that was my job to give it a name, geoglyphology, and tell everybody about it, because it changes history. In fact, in my second book, Lamerica, I have a whole chapter devoted to Columbus and why he came here, and geoglyphs on the ground that he and his crew placed there to claim the Caribbean and Central America for the Spanish.
Oh, okay, okay. Wow. Okay, well, let me ask you another question real quick. These geoglyphs, okay, what do you think about these crop circles? And the geoglyphs are boundaries, borders, you know, of territory. Okay, and these crop circles that cannot be done man-made to the way we've seen it. People can try, but they can't do it. What are your opinion on these crop circles that's appearing all over the place?
I think they come from the very people we've just been talking about, a higher intelligence that we cannot see but exists, and they're trying to send us a message. In fact, what I was getting ready to say just a moment ago is I had talked to a colleague just yesterday, and we were talking about all these things that are happening and all the UFOs and all the crop circles and all this stuff. And what we came to the conclusion of is that these spiritual beings, whoever they may be, is trying to get us ready for when they finally appear so that we won't be scared about it, because they could have done something long before. If we know they've been here for 20, 50,000 years then, and they haven't done anything to us, then we won't be afraid of them, I'm sure. But I'm sure there's certain people that will be, but intelligent people won't be, because they could have done something a long time ago. But I think the crop circles.
I've been looking
at a lot of these crop circles real close, and most of them are nothing more than geoglyphs with pointers pointing somewhere. Now, a lot of them you'll see a big circle and a little circle next to each other. That is a typical geoglyph that you'll find that man made long ago. And I would love, in fact, I called the guy that researches these things in England and asked him if he would send me some pictures of ones that had been taken pictures of. And I can't just get it out of a book, because I have to know where True North is in order to decipher these things. And he wouldn't give it to me. He said, if you want it, you're going to have to pay for it. Well, that's not the way I do business. I give away everything I got because I want everybody to know about it.
Exactly. I'm with you on that one. But you know something? That's one good point that you said. You said that they're prepping us to not be afraid when they reveal themselves. But Quasi is kept, you know, whether intelligent or not, I think it's going to be scary. And I think that's because the governments have tried so much to debunk their existence and not allowing us to be a part of the things that have been exposed and the fact-finding part of it. You know, they create that fear, you know, because now when something happened, you know, whether they little green men or whether they look like Transformers, whatever the case may be, it's going to put some fear in our hearts, because we know if they that intelligent to do what they've been doing, they could wipe us out, and we want to know, why are you here? Is it because they think we're destroying the planet because of these nuclear bombs and chemicals and stuff that we're doing, that we're destroying a planet? I mean, what's the real reason?
Well, there's two things I want to say about what you just said. Number one, since the UFO sightings ramped up, nuclear tests, well, first of all, they went under nuclear tests, went underground, and then they just ceased altogether. So I think that the aliens, if you want to call them that, told them, if you keep using nuclear power above ground and let it ruin the earth, we're going to do something about it. I think that they gave them the word. I really think that our government is in contact with these people. I really do.
Second of all,
the government says there's no such thing as UFOs, but every time one crashes on the ground, the first thing that's there is a double-bladed helicopter with a bunch of Army people on it surrounding it. So you can't have your cake and eat it, too. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that is so true. But, you know, like you see these movies coming out like War of the World, where they're here to harvest human beings, you know. I don't know what their purpose is, but I know that if they wanted to destroy us, they could have did it a long time ago. I think they are observing us, and, you know, it is what it is. I just pray that when they do reveal themselves, I hope that I have a peace of mind not to, you know, be ignorant enough to run off and no one accept the fact and, you know, try to communicate, you know, because things that's unfamiliar makes you a little uncomfortable. And last night I was outside with my grandkids, and it was a pretty clear night, and we was having a little fire and fire pit and everything. I was looking up at the sky, and I had this really high-intensity flashlight, and I was making some crazy little symbols in the sky, and then I'll stop and point on one of the stars. And I believe, you know, this is true, Arthur. My grandson it blinked back. I saw a green light, a red light, a yellow light. Now, it didn't move, and planes don't hover.
Right.
And I said,
I'm buying into that. I don't disagree with you a bit.
Yeah, I said, what the heck? I said, did y'all see that? And then I did it again. I made like some sawtooth pattern, a circle, blinked the thing on and off, and then held it onto one light in the sky. And then I moved the light, and it followed it real fast back and forth. I said, okay, that's enough. Time to go in the house. I said, because
you
the ass come down here, I ain't ready.
You better be careful, because I've heard people that did that. A few days later, they get taken up to a spaceship.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I don't want no prongs in my eyeball.
You better be careful. Yeah.
I'm not going to do that no more, because I saw that thing move. And my grandson said, Grandma, you see that? You see the light? And, you know, planes, they don't hover, you know. And this thing just stayed in one spot. And it freaked me out, needless to say.
Yeah.
I said, oh, my God. And this is true. Seeing with my own eyes, and you heard it right here. But Arthur Fairham, I also want to touch on the fact that how can people get a hold of you? Not just so much as for your book, because it's some personal stuff that they are too embarrassed to ask someone, and they just want to talk to a man who's just very knowledgeable.
Okay. I have my main website is A Fairham. That's AFARAM at thefarhamfoundation.com.
All
and they can go there.
Mm-hmm.
AFARAM at thefarhamfoundation.com. And there they'll find all about geoglyphology. They'll see several of my other websites that explain different places that I've studied. They'll see a review of my book, Lemurica, and they'll be able to buy it there. And it's got my email on it. So if you want to know about me or contact me, you can go there. And if you want to know what my credits, are, all you have to do is put my name, Arthur Fairham, in Google, and you'll get more than you want.
All right. God said you can Google him, and you definitely can Google me as well. You know, if you want to reach me, I got 9 books out there, and they're all about real life situations. I mean, I don't sugarcoat nothing. I call a spade, you know, them dirty little secrets y'all have behind closed doors that y'all don't want to discuss. That's how I do it, you know. I deal with adults.
That's why
I deal with little kids.
That's why we can talk to each other, because we say what's on our mind.
Amen. That's what I'm talking about. So if y'all want to get my books.
That's why I like you so much.
Amen.
We can
That's
see
what
what's on our mind.
That's right. I love a person who keep it real. I love that. Yep. I love that. Yes, yes. But If y'all want one of my books, you can go to my website at www.terrywithayle.com. I also have 10 perfume fragrances that I'm selling and lotion, and I just had to put an order together today going out to Miss Judith O'Malley. Thanks for supporting the sister, and the stuff smells good, and I know you'll come back for the rest of the other 9. And I also, you know, you can catch me here on Blog Talk Radio each Friday at 7:30 p.m. But before I get off the mic, I just want Mr. Farahan to give us some words of wisdom, something he want to share, you know, or something he just want to say. You know, this is your opportunity, darling.
Okay. We live in a very confused and difficult world, and as most of you and your friends know, spirituality can bring you out of that. And in particular, my way of using spirituality is transcendental meditation, because it's a direct communication with God. And I admit I push it because I would like to bring people out of the confines of someone else's rules into God's rules and direct communication, so that they get the benefit of this communication and spirituality. And like I said, our souls are in the image of God, and if we meditate enough, we can connect that soul with our physical body and do wonderful things with it. The one thing transcendental meditation tells you is, or teaches you, is not to be afraid of anything, because once you're in tune with the world, everything's going to be done, and you're going to do the right things, and there's no reason to be fearful of anything, because you know that things are going to work out for you. Many times I think I'm not going to make it to the end of the month with my budget, and I'll be darned if every time I get a check in the mail or something happens to where I'm taken care of. And that's just what happens when you get close to God, whether it be through a church or through meditation. Of course, anybody can meditate. You don't have to be in a church or not in a church. Anybody can meditate. And if you get on the internet, it'll tell you how. So,
but you know something, I believe too, though, that you draw the right energy. If you're the type of person who is optimistic and you embrace change and good stuff,
exactly,
you draw positive stuff. I'm not going to keep whining about woe is me, oh Lord, because I'm not trying to draw that kind of crap.
You have to have positive energy. That is the
main thing.
I'm so glad you brought that up. You have to have positive energy. And if you're down in the dumps all the time, you need to get either praying or meditating, preferably meditating, and get yourself out of that slump. And really, if you believe, you will be taken care of. It's just that simple. Don't you agree with that?
I know that's true, because God has brought me a mighty, mighty long way, because, you know, being a single female, you know, sometimes, you know, it's just good that when you're going through a storm, because we all have different storms in our life, that you just have somebody with you when you're going through it. But, you know, it's good to have the people that I embrace in my circle, because a lot of people call me their friend, and I am a friend to them, but they are just associates of mine. You know, I have a very small group of people that I will call a friend, you know, and they know who they are. You know, like my friend Halsey in Maryland, you know, friend Kelly in Nebraska, because my friend Tracy here in Columbus, Georgia, Lillian Holt, you know, Samuel Alexander, they know who they are, because when I'm going through something, they're there, you know. They're there to help pick me up, not to be, you know, trying to dog me out and say, well, you shouldn't have did that, you know. I need somebody with positive energy, you know, and that's what I try to give people.
I shy away from negative people like the plague.
Yeah.
Because they'll just soak up your energy.
It drains you. It really do.
I have a friend.
You know, their talk, when I hear their voice is so depressing, da, 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 and immediately I don't want to talk, you know, and I say, oh, I just feel so drained, like they sucked the life out of me. So, you know, I don't need people around me that's negative, always complaining right. that you can't do this, you can't do that, because if I was like them, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And it's all about growth. And I feel you on that, Arthur.
Right.
That's why, man, I got so much love for you. The first time I talked to you on the other show that I do on Thursdays on WMEL 104.1, you know, I love talking to people that are smart, that are, you know, knowledgeable, because I like to learn stuff every day. I don't care how small it is, something new. I want to increase my knowledge because I believe that knowledge is truly power, you know. And a lot of people,
yeah.
you know, they ain't ready for me, you know, and I don't really care, because I got to make my own mark in this world. I'm going to do what I got to do.
Well, I love you too, and I hope someday we get to meet.
We're going to make that happen. But, Shalonda, I want to ask you, got anything else you want to say to Arthur before he get up off of here? Because she's been so quiet sitting back there in the background.
Right. When I hear a whole lot of information that I'm not really knowledgeable on, I just sit back and soak it in. That's the way I get.
Ain't nothing wrong
with that. I try to interact, but I like to hear information that I don't know, because, I mean, everybody looks to me for information on a daily basis, so it's good to come across somebody who knows something that you don't, so that you can be taught instead of always being a teacher. So I do want to thank you for the information. You have me looking on all types of websites and researching, because now it sparked my interest, especially with the Masons, because, you know, it was such a huge part of my family and still
mm-hmm.
is a huge part of my my distant family in Pennsylvania
mm-hmm.
and in Florida.
Well,
so,
we've got a few minutes left. Let me say something about what the both of you talked about before. Both of you have been in a Masonic family, and both
mm-hmm.
of you have talked about the Eastern Star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the West, the Eastern Star. Well, America, in fact, my book, L'America, means the Western Star. And the Celts, when they were in Europe and England and Ireland, called the Americas La America, which means the Western Star. Now, when the country was founded and things got settled down, the Masons started another group called the Eastern Star, which was for the elite men and women of the Mormon society. And the Western Star, I believe, was for the men. And I just wanted to say that, because both of you have talked about the Eastern Star, and I just
mm-hmm.
want to let you know that there was a Western Star before there was an Eastern Star, and what it does is it ties the Masonic experience all together.
Mm. Well, let me ask you a question. I might be way out there, but it's something just popped in my head, okay? You talked about the Eastern Star. You mentioned the Western Star, and I believe that Christ was born under the Northern Star. So what the hell is the Southern Star? The devil? What the hell is going on?
I'm not going to touch that one. I'm not going to touch that one.
I ain't mad at you, baby. I so enjoy you every time I talk to you, Arthur. Baby, you just blessing to my spirit, because, I mean, that really makes me feel good when I talk to people and they can share something, like Shalonda said, something I don't know. I like to know everything if my brain could take it in, you know. I just love talking to people, and I'm very people-oriented, because what I don't know, I want to know, you know, so I don't care. I'm not bashful. I'm not shy, you know, and sometimes I have a tendency to stare at people and I be looking and trying to figure out what I think they might be doing. People say, why am I gawking? You know, I'm not trying to be offensive, but, you know, I'm just curious about life and people.
I'm the same way. I love to go to the airport because I'm a people watcher, and I like
me
to
too,
watch the people
too.
Go by. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? The first thing that we all have to be is spiritual. If you're spiritual,
mm-hmm.
you believe in God, and you stay in contact, and you're
mm-hmm.
honest and faithful, everything mm-hmm. else will take care of itself.
Amen, amen.
Yeah.
And you're
yeah.
so right about that, because even when we fall short and we stumble and we go through some things in our
mm-hmm.
personal
mm-hmm.
life, you know, we don't stay down. You know, like I recently
no.
had a water pipe burst, and it created havoc all through my home. And initially, man, I was like, oh, my God, I was devastated. But peace came after
you
all.
Found a good, you found something good in it, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
You're right, Austin,
yes.
Because I'm supposed to leave in July to go to Michigan. And if that had happened while I was gone for 4 days, could you imagine
yeah.
my house where everything would have been ruined? So then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I see the blessing, and I just want
well,
to thank you,
if
Carolyn.
I look back, as I look back, even over the past few weeks, but I'm talking
mm-hmm.
back decades, I see where when bad things happen to me, that I learned something that made me who I am now that was
exactly.
a good thing. And so we all have to go through these trials and tribulations. Mm-hmm. The only thing is we can't give up, and we have to believe.
That's right. We all going to be tested, and that's how we get our
right.
testimony. You know, and everybody wants
exactly.
to say, woe is me, but, you know, there's always some bright spot to it. And I just want to thank God that, you know, what happened while I was still home. And I thank God that Allstate decided to pay the claim, because that was like,
yeah.
you know, they wasn't sure whether it was inside the wall or under the foundation, but it's all going to work itself out. I just can't wait till they get started and start repairing my house the way it was. But, Arthur, I love you. And anytime
yeah.
you want to come back, you know, just to hang out, or you're going to do a new book, or you just got something you just want to share, because it's 2 hours is never enough to just, it's like the tip of the iceberg. As soon as I get interested, my time has ran out. You know, it's so much.
Well,
I
didn't,
to know
I didn't
you.
Tell you. When you're talking about coming back and writing books and that, I'm working on
mm-hmm.
a TV thing right now, believe it or not.
All right. Well, you know something. You know, I don't mind getting some VIP tickets to be in the front row, you know, because I show a fly out and have my little pretty behind on TV. Hey, when the camera scan the audience.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to come, I'm speaking at a convention in Michigan on the last 3 days of September. And if you want to go to my website, down at the bottom, it tells you how to go to that convention. So if you're free and you want to pay a couple of bucks, you can come and listen to me.
All right. Yeah, because I'm going to be in Michigan 18th, and I'm coming back on the 21st. I'm promoting my latest book, Exposed, in my perfume line. And it's on sale, and the price is a slash, but after the 18th, it goes back to $60 per 3.4 ounces, you know. And people know you go to the store, ladies, you know, y'all paying like $100-some, you know, for 3.4 ounces. So, you know, I'm giving you a break from now to July the 18th. You can get that for $40.
I wish you the
best. Thank you, baby.
I wish you the best.
Thank you so much. Yes, mm-hmm. And Shalonda, is there anything you want to say? Because we got to get up out of here.
Right. I do want to thank Arthur for coming through with the last minute.
Yes, baby.
It was down to the wire.
Well,
thank you for that one.
If you guys weren't such great people, I would have turned it down, but I couldn't let you down.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Hugs and kisses, baby.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
thank you again. And that's a wrap for Unmasked with authors Terry Elow and Shalonda. And come back next Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because we're going to do it again. Oh, no. I'm sorry. Don't come back next Friday. That's 4th of July. We're going to be throwing some fireworks. We're going to be lighting it up. We're going to get our party on. Don't come back Friday. Go hang out, because we're going to have a day off. But catch us on the 11th of July, and we're going to have Tanner Skinner, a young guy, 23 years old. He done went from so many jobs. You can call him a renaissance man, and did professional boxing, homeless, you know, did this, did that. You know, his story is so inspirational because he's 23 years old, and he did what most people do in a lifetime. But next week, you got off, relax. It's 4th of July, Independence Day, and let's celebrate that with our families and our friends, and be safe, and don't be out there drinking and driving. That's not how we do it. A life is important, you know, and it's the quality of your life, you know. So make every moment count. Build relationships. Stop tearing down our relationships, you know. Do something positive with your life. And like you said, you know, Arthur Furham, check him out. Arthur Furham, give him one more time that website so they can find how to get a hold of you.
Okay, it's Afarham, A-F-A-R-A-M, at thefarhamfoundation.com. And it's got an explanation of geoglyphology, It's got several sites that I visited and surveyed. It's got all kinds of stuff on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just going to say this. Most people, when you go to their website and stuff, it says their website.com. Now, you know, when you was going to school, they teach you about finding those keywords. Now, when he said author firm foundation, that's the keyword foundation, because he's building on some things. On top of things, he's building and constantly adding new information. So when you quote that word foundation, that you know this brother is heavy. He know what he's talking about, because it's not a .com, it's a foundation. So you better jump on it while you can. Don't call Sister Lyle, because I ain't got nothing for you. You know, you got to talk to Arthur. And with that being said, thank you again. We love you, and we're out of here.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
love you, and I'll see you real soon.
Unmasked with authoress Terry Eli. I'm going to let you on a little secret. She writes books. She has her own perfume line. If you want to catch her at www.terrylyle.com. If you want to listen on next time, Friday at 7:30. See you later.
And Shalonda, thank you, darling. Yeah. That's a wrap. We out of here. Have a good time on 4th of July. It's Independence Day for America.
Absolutely. Going home.
All right, darling. Bye-bye.